retains the Ryder Cup.
And with that 6-foot birdie putt by Shane Lowry, finding the bottom of the 18th hole cup on Sunday at Bethpage Black. Indeed, the Europeans withstood a ferocious rally in singles play and guaranteed possession of that beautiful Ryder Cup trophy for at least the next 2 years. With thanks to Dan Hicks and NBC Sports, I am delighted to welcome you to a special recap of the 45th Ryder Cup here on Musings on Golf. My name is Kelly Elbin, and I'm so pleased to be joined once again on Musings on Golf, the great Anne Liguori, who has covered every Ryder Cup home and away since 1999, and is the president of Anne Liguori Productions, the host of both Talking Golf on WFAN in New York and of the Sports Interview podcast, and the author, her latest book, is Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. And my friend, welcome. I watched it from afar. You were there for the crazy week. Maybe let's kind of start on a macro level. Anne Liguori, what were your takeaways from the week, the crazy 3 days that ultimately culminated in Europe's 15-13 win in the Ryder Cup?
Well, first of all, Kelly, thanks for having me on the show again. And thank you, Janice, who I've adored for, gosh, decades now. So it's an honor to be back on. And oh gosh, the takeaways, this could be the whole show, just my own takeaways, right? First of all, you heard that, the soundbite from Shane Lowry, and oh my gosh, who better than Shane Lowry, right? To win that half point for the European team to retain the Ryder Cup. So full of emotion. He even said he lives for this Ryder Cup. He gets out of bed for this Ryder Cup. So, oh my gosh, it was really a fairy tale ending for Shane Lowry to make that putt. But couple takeaways. First of all, you know, the Europeans played formidable golf on Friday and Saturday. They had an answer for everything. Just when you saw an American make an incredible putt for birdie, they were, you know, the Europeans would answer with a birdie from crazy, you know, lengths. I mean, it was just such impressive play. Of all the Ryder Cups I've covered, I've never seen a team play that well on Friday and Saturday. They read the greens better. They made way more putts. They looked like the cohesive, well-oiled machine that they are. And I know we can get into that in a second. So from a team chemistry standpoint, you know, they're just incredible. The European partnerships are well cemented, from Rory McIlroy and Tommy Fleetwood, John Rahm and Tyrell Hatton. The incredible play of Tommy Fleetwood, John Rahm, Justin Rose. You can't say enough about the experience of, you know, a lot of the guys on the European team and what it means to them to win an away, you know, Ryder Cup. All right. And they were prepared. You know, Rory McIlroy stated it that in his mission back at Marco Simone publicly, he proclaimed, we are going to go to Bethpage Black and win the Ryder Cup. A couple other just a general, and then we can get into every detail, Kelly.
Yeah, please.
Luke Donald is just a brilliant tactician. He's a brilliant leader. He's a brilliant communicator. Even, you know, U.S. Captain Keegan Bradley said as much, right? So I can't, you know, praise Luke Donald enough. He's just so smart and doing it. Having the experience from 2023 really helped. Fourth thing, PGA should have been much more on top of security and a zero tolerance policy for people who cross the line in terms of hostility toward Rory. So I'm sure we can get into that a little bit. And then, you know, I just think obviously Scottie Scheffler really didn't show up until the singles. He didn't show up, not really, he didn't. And that's crazy and something Scotty really has to work on, you know, these team formats, and we can get more into that, of course. And then I just think Keegan Bradley as a captain, you know, looking back, I think he should have played. I don't think he should have captained. I think he should have played, and it was kind of He was in a weird situation, and I'm sure he's heartbroken that he didn't play. I think he would have come up with a heck of a lot more points than the majority of the the Americans. Yeah. And I really think maybe a more experienced captain would have benefited the U.S. So those are pretty much my takeaways. And then I don't want to take up, you know, the whole time talking. So, you know,
No. This is good. Exactly what I hope to hear. And you and I and Janice Self, our fabulous executive producer, and we were chatting a little bit beforehand and before we came on, just in terms of, again, how much this is always meant to the Europeans. And you used the word mission when you talked about Rory and you talked about Shane Lowry. For goodness sake, Shane Lowry, an Irishman, won the Open Championship in Ireland. And he said that the Ryder Cup, essentially winning that on foreign soil, having to come down to him, meant more to him. And Liguori, what American player could you ever think of who would say something like that? Who would say, yes, making this putt was bigger than me winning the Open Championship or the Masters. I can't even begin to think of who that would be. And I've always contended, and I'll say it again, the United States wants to win the Ryder Cup. The Europeans live for the Ryder Cup, and they tell you that, and they show you that, and they show you that. I think the tactician term you used in regards to Captain Luke Donald is correct. They put a plan in place, and they dedicate the resources and the thinking and the strategy to this event. It's that important to them. It's important to the U.S. It's just to me, and it's just at a different plane. It's a little different level. And now it's been five times since the Ryder Cup, since all of Europe has come in, five times that the Europeans have won on U.S. soil. The United States has not won over there since 1993. And I think there's a lot that adds up to why that is. And you hit on several of those right out of the box.
That's right. That team chemistry, that passion to play in this event. And let's look at the team chemistry aspect for a second, because, you know, that's always been the criticism toward the American team. And it's gotten better with the Americans the last couple Ryder Cups. You know, a lot of these guys are very, very friendly with each other. They support each other. Their kids play with each other. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of them live in Jupiter near each other. But it's definitely not like the team chemistry of the European team. I think they're cultural differences, Kelly. Over there, first of all, this is one of the few sporting events in Europe where it ties everybody together. Yes. Really, if you look at any other event, they're pit against each other. This is one of the few sporting events where they're all playing together. And they literally love each other. All the hugging and the genuine, you know, bromances going on with these guys is so obvious when you watch closely on television or in person. So, yes, I just think, you know, the differences are cultural. Now, ironically, most of them live in the United States, have gone to American universities, and are benefiting from the American lifestyle, and so they're beating us at our own game, which I find it very ironic and somewhat disconcerting. But yes.
And you're not the only one who talks about that in terms of how many live here, and I understand that it's frustrating. It's a lot of things to Americans who look at the Rory McIlroys and the John Rahms of the world and say, "Wow, you." Really kind of an Americanized European, if you will. But to your point, they find that secret sauce. I don't know whether it's a sort of a mystical, mythical thing that they have going. They celebrate the legends of their past. 2 years ago, the entire room for them at Rome was dedicated to Seve Ballesteros. They talk about the Bernhard Langers and the teams that were formed, the Ballesteros and the other Spaniards he played with, the Lothabal, we don't talk that way. We don't lean into it that way. And I think that's one more way that they just, the Europeans have that edge. It's almost kind of going in every time. They have that edge built in.
Oh, they absolutely do. And they use Seve as inspiration to this day. There are quotes all over in the European locker room from Seve. And in, you know, Ola Thabo is a big influence on that team. They relish the experience of, you know, the veterans, the veteran captains, and they get inspiration from, you know, the former European captains who many of them who were there. Luke Donald has just been incredible. And I think messaging is also one of his strengths as a communicator. And he, if you listen to him carefully, Kelly, his messaging about the European team is really, really brilliant. So much so that I think he definitely, you know, this whole pay for play that the Americans, were enjoying, that became, before the actual tournament even started, that was, you know, that became 1 point for the Europeans. I mean, even at the opening ceremony during Luke Donald's speech, he basically made a jab and said that the European team is fueled by something money can't buy. Now, he later said, no, that wasn't meant to be a jab, that I had my speech prepared months ago. But hey, this the fact that, you know, the Americans were paid $500,000 each, $300,000 to the charity of their choice, $200,000 to whatever they wanted to use it for. And to the Americans' credit, they did say, look, some of them said, we're giving everything, the whole bit, to charity. But it was a bad look for the Americans. And I think both teams should be treated equally, whether it's, you know, to pay or not to pay. Now, the Europeans said that they had the opportunity to make money, but they turned it down. And you heard Rory say vehemently, I would pay the Ryder Cup for the honor to play and the opportunity to play on this team. So therein is another difference. Culture, maybe it's a cultural difference. I don't know. But one up for the Europeans just on that pay for play issue. And I really do think Captain Luke Donald used that in his messaging to kind of jab the Americans a little bit. So mentally, that was kind of like us, you know, one up for Donald there as far as, you know, strategy goes, I think.
Great. And he also talked about the four times that they had won going in on American soil. He preached that, right? It was in the team room. All those little things, you plant those seeds in your players' minds that, hey, we've done this before. We're not like the Americans who haven't come over and won in our place since, you know, for 32 years. We've done this. Let's do it again. Here's how we're going to do it, guys. Let's do it again. I thought it was highly respectful of Keegan Bradley saying, in my eyes, this was afterward, in my eyes, Luke Donald is the best European captain of all time. Now, that's his opinion, and I understand that from his perspective. Tony Jacklin was really the European captain who got it all started for them and put in place the structure and the first class flights and so forth, all that led them to at Seve and so forth that wanted to be part of it. But yeah, and Keegan loves. I'm not sure that you have a more passionate American about the Ryder Cup than the guy who's dealt with so much difficulty with it as Keegan. He wants it so badly. He made poor decisions. The Harris English, Colin Morikawa pairing. Look, if your metrics people tell you that's the worst one, and then they go out and get smashed in the first round, don't repeat it. Okay. I'm still a bit confused here. Cam Young, who actually set the course record at Bethpage Black in winning the Met Open, didn't play in the first session. I mean, why would you put a Russell Henley out when you've got a guy who's already proven he can play on that golf course? But again, the pairings are, you look at the results, and Tommy Fleetwood over the course of the 3 days, 4-1-0. Tyrrell Hatton, 3-0-1. Rory, 3-1-1. John Rahm, 3-2-0. Your best players have to play well. Why, in your opinion, did Scottie Scheffler struggle so mightily over the first 2 days?
Well, again, I think it goes back to that team chemistry versus individualism. And as a metaphor, you know, the Europeans were hands down dominant Friday and Saturday in those team formats. And then on Sunday, the Americans go crazy winning all these, you know, single session. And that's the team versus the individual formats, right? Look, Scottie Scheffler, you can't say enough about his play last year and this year on the PGA Tour. But again, you look at somebody like Tiger Woods, his record was 13-21-3 in what, his 8 Ryder Cups when he dominated golf. Just because you're the most dominant player doesn't mean that you can play up to your standards as a team, right? With a partner. I don't think the Americans play foursomes enough. It's a format that the Europeans play all the time, alternate shot. In fact, I heard that when they came in to New York, like almost a week early, it was a week earlier that they came to New York. And I thought, wow, this is the earliest any team has ever gotten to a Ryder Cup. A week before, they went to Bethpage Black, practiced a couple of days. Then a lot of them took off, came to the east end of Long Island, where I live, played Shinnecock, played Friar's Head, played Sabonic. And I heard that they played alternate shot just in those practice games. So they play it more. Now, how many of our guys play alternate shot when they're just fooling around having fun? They just don't. Nor do they often play, you know, best ball. So I think these are formats that these guys growing up in Europe played a lot more than we do. And I think the United States has always struggled with alternate shot. Getting back to Scottie Scheffler, listen, he needs to pick it up with these partner formats, because it's embarrassing for a guy that great, America's, you know, the world's number one player, to be 0-4 going into the single session. I mean, that's just unacceptable. Do they have to practice more for that format? When do they have time to practice? Maybe they just don't have the time with the calendar the way it is. You know, the American team, again, probably should have gotten together a lot more and played those formats together. Yeah, they played in California, but that was, you know, that wasn't a team format. They need to practice playing and cement, you know, player partnerships that are winning partnerships. We certainly have the talent for that, no doubt, but they don't yet have the team chemistry. A lot of the team, you know, it was just too awkward. They don't do it enough like the Europeans do. So I think that's a key issue.
And you're so spot on. And to your point in regards to Captain Donald bringing his troops over early and they played, yes, Keegan Bradley had, what, 10 of the 12 or 11 of the 12 guys out in Northern California, but he didn't bring them in early. He didn't have them play in advance on the course of playing the Ryder Cup for those in those formats. And again, those are big deals. They're not actually small things. Those are big deals, right? For a country that at least for those teams that struggle with playing in those formats. I'm so pleased to be joined by Ann Liguori, who, as I mentioned, the outside has covered every Ryder Cup since 1999, when a fellow by the name of Justin Leonard made one of the craziest putts of all time to secure such a dramatic win for the U.S. in that Ryder Cup. And by the way, what a way to start your coverage of the Ryder Cup at the Country Club with what happened that Sunday afternoon, huh?
Oh, the battle at Brookline. That was unbelievable. Now, that was during the days when WFAN in New York, the radio station that I've been a part of since I was the first female host to talk all sports for 25 years with my show, Hey Liguori, What's the Story? But I also did updates at all the golf and the U.S. Open tennis. And those were the days when we were on the air every 20 minutes. So at the Country Club of Brookline, talk about how much the Ryder Cup has, you know, grown in so many ways. Our media room was inside the country club. It was like just one of the rooms. And so I couldn't really get out much because I had to watch the coverage on television. Yes, they had TVs back then. And I was on the air every 20 minutes, so I couldn't really leave. I had to really watch the full coverage on TV. But when Justin Leonard made that 45-foot birdie putt on 17, oh my gosh, you could hear the roars of the entire, you know, country club at Brookline through the walls and into the press room. And the European, you know, it's such a smaller press corps back then. That you know, you could hear the Americans just cheering and going crazy, right? The media. So there was a lot of rooting going on in that press room as well. Those were the days, and I'll never forget. And I write about this in Life on the Green: Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf, where five of the six guys in the book are just Ryder Cup legend. You know, from Jack Nicklaus to Tom Watson to Padraig Harrington, Ben Crenshaw, obviously, when he said at that Brookline Ryder Cup, "I'm going to leave you all with one thought." And he pointed his finger to everybody in the room and he said, "I'm a big believer in fate. I have a good feeling about this. That's all I'm going to tell you." So yes, that was a special first Ryder Cup to cover. And they talk about those stories in the book. Just incredible.
And incredible also, as you said, just the sheer growth, the size, the scope, the importance of the Ryder Cup, even it just from 25 years ago, not even to speak about the Ryder Cup. It, by the way, in 2 years, it will be the 100th anniversary of the Ryder Cup. The first Ryder Cup was played in 1927 at Worcester Country Club. You'll hear more from Ann Liguori about the Ryder Cup right after you hear from our trusted friends at Titleist and William and Harry. Golf fans, are you ready to wear your pride? William and Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here just in time to celebrate the Ryder Cup and to help you feel like you're part of Team USA, cheering on every shot. Two bold designs, premium deerskin, spikeless traction, 100% waterproof, and all-day comfort from tee to green and beyond. Limited production. When they're gone, they're gone. Rebuy now at WilliamAndHarry.com. Get into spirit. Get into comfort.
Titleist Pro V1 and Pro V1X are the best performing, most consistent in the game. So how does the best get better? You start by listening to the best players in the world. You experiment, iterate, validate. You trust the best process to create the best golf ball the game has ever known. The all-new Pro V1 and Pro V1X. More speed off the tee, more control with your irons, more spin with your wedges, and more opportunity to shoot your lowest score.
Ann Liguori, we have to talk about the absolute insane nonsense that went on Saturday afternoon with horrible things said to Rory McIlroy. I don't know if it's gotten too big. I mean, the build out, everything in the build up of the Ryder Cup is massive, and it's understood. And it was all this stuff about, you know, how loud the and crazy the Long Island fans were going to be. And you certainly had a lot of that on Saturday afternoon. And talk a little bit more again. I agree with you. I think the PGA of America hugely missed the mark in security. That should have been taken care of right away. And it just festered and was a major problem. And kudos to Rory and the others for playing through that and winning. I mean, kind of telling it, you know, stuffing it down the Americans' throats, if you will.
Well, I mean, Rory used that. And used it to help win for sure. I mean, he turned all that hostility inwardly and turned it out and focused on incredible performances on the golf course. on particularly on that Saturday, right? When most of the was reported. But yeah, the PGA missed out. They should have had much more security in place. They should have zero tolerance for anybody who crosses a line. A huge security guard should just pick the person up and and lift him off the premises. And in order to do that, you should have had a bunch of security guards, you know, on every hole and following particularly Rory, because he was the target for most of it. Unfortunately, it gives New York a bad name. Who knows if they're, you know, you don't know where all these people who are heckling are from. You know, everybody thinks, oh, they might be from Long Island. But I having hosted Hey LaGoy, What's the Story, a Collins sports show, for 25 years on The Fan, I know sports fans from New York and golf fans to be some of the most knowledgeable and passionate sports fans of anywhere. Do I know them as being hostile and crazy? No, not unless you go to a Ranger game and sit in the blue seats. Then they yell crazy stuff. You know, golf is not supposed to be like that, right? But listen, absolutely they're serving alcohol. They're serving beer for what, $30? Not even that, maybe a lot less than that, a cup. When you have a price tag of $800 to $1,100 per ticket, these guys obviously can afford a lot of beer. All right. I don't think I think they should have cut off the alcohol at a certain time. Look, there's so many things that I think the PGA, you know, could have done. I will say, I remember at Hazeltine, they had to shut down a lot of the stands that sold alcohol because the fans were getting unruly back then. This is, you know, not a first at Ryder Cups. You know, I think you get it on both sides, but I think the magnitude of it and what was being said, and with social media now, you know, you could see it, you could hear the insults. It's just, everything's become bigger because of where we are now as a society. And it's unfortunate. So I think to prepare for, you know, all the magnitude of such a huge event like this, the PGA could have handled it a lot better and a lot faster. Sunday, I hear everything was managed, but by then they had security in place. So
it had really been a black eye. There's just no other way to say it in terms of.
And the Americans were doing what they should have been doing all weekend, really playing well.
Absolutely.
You know, the Europeans read the greens better. They putt better. They on Friday and Saturday, they played like they were capable of playing. I mean, collectively, that it was just amazing how well they played. The Americans didn't show up Friday and Saturday, and Sunday they did. So the focus was more on the performances of the American team Sunday.
And you spent some time, you said, before we started this, on the BBC with a few interviews. What was their perspective, Ann, as far as what they saw with the audience and the bad behavior over here? And any other perspectives that you got from them that may have been different from how we view the Ryder Cup and the 3 days at Bethpage?
Well, they were mostly news programs, so it didn't get too in-depth. But of course, if you're gonna ask me a couple questions on BBC television prime time, and the crowd behavior was one of the big issues, they wanted to hear mostly about that. Yay, it was great. They were very happy that Europe won. So, you know, give them some details about the European play and how the Americans almost miraculously came back on Sunday. But the majority of it was about the crowd behavior, giving New York, you know, a bad, you know, name. Now, I have to say the commentators in the lead up, and I'm not going to mention names, but if I heard the word hostility one more time, the European team was prepared for it. As you know, and Luke Donald had them wearing virtual headsets to the noise of hecklers, you know, so they could get used to what it might sound like and how to perhaps play and practice with all that noise in your ear. And apparently he hired a comedian to heckle them at a session even prior to the start of the game. So it wasn't something that they weren't prepared for, which is another, you know, point in Luke Donald's leadership cap. So I just think, I hope by mentioning the word hostility so many times, I hope on the air by some of these, you know, commentators, I hope that didn't encourage the crowd to be more hostile or to cross a line more than what happens at a lot of Ryder Cups. But it was unacceptable. And I think the PGA from now onwards, they have to take a different approach and a much more intense approach to make sure this doesn't happen.
Good stuff. We completely agree on that. Let's go back to on course, literally. Keegan Bradley said after it was all done that he would have maybe made the rough a little tougher. He might have made the golf course a little more penal than it was. And you had so many shots, even coming out of the rough, where the ball just stuck, came back. It the everything that was built up about how challenging and ridiculously so the black course is, and it didn't play that way. It did not play that way at all. And you could see whether you were in person or on TV. Was that a miss by the PGA of America and by the captain of taking advantage of the home course, if you will?
Oh, absolutely. And Keegan actually addressed that issue. He initiated that conversation as well. He said, I should have stuck to my instincts and made the course setup more difficult. I've played Bethpage Black many times. It's harder to play when I play a 14 handicap than it was for these guys. There was absolutely no rough. And, you know, to take the teeth out of one of the toughest, what's supposed to be one of the toughest golf courses in the country, it has to be penal. It has to punish guys that don't keep the ball in the fairway off the tee. And it didn't. And, you know, they wanted more birdies. They wanted it to be exciting, but it actually played against the Americans. So that was unfortunate. And Keegan, you know, recognized that immediately and actually admitted that he set it up wrong.
Talk a little bit about this envelope rule and Victor Hovland not being able to play. It has come up a few times in past Ryder Cups. I personally do not think that it should be changed. And the reason is that it hasn't been abused in the past. Yeah, I guess in theory you could say, well, if you have a big lead, just have half a dozen of your guys say, oh, I don't feel well. But that's never happened. It did change things, though. There's no question, right? All of a sudden now the Europeans just needed 2 points. Your thoughts, Anne Liguori, on the envelope rule of a guy on the other team having to having to sit out and the match being halved, as opposed to the team in this case, Europe, benefited.
Yeah, it's a tough one because I don't know how I would change it, but I think I would change it. I know the rule has been in place since 1979. But, you know, as Keegan Bradley said, you know, it was 25% of the points they needed to win. And he said, if a person gets hurt on the football field, you don't give them 7 points, say if, you know, somebody like Tom Brady gets hurt. I don't know how I would change it. I'd have to really think about it. But I think it certainly was advantageous to the European team. You know, I love Victor Hovland. I'm sorry that he had a neck injury, but that could have been a point if Harris English and, you know, had played against Victor. Harris could have won that match. That could have been 1 point for the United States. So it's a tough call. I know it's been used in the past. Trying to think, it was used back at in was it Kiowa?
When Steve Pate was involved in an accident and car accident.
That's right. And yeah. You know, the Americans were on the winning side of that, so maybe it was payback.
That could very well have been, yeah. And I want to look ahead to Adair Manor in Ireland in 2 years for, as I said, the centennial of the Ryder Cup. But before, let's talk a little bit about, elaborate your thoughts, please, on Cameron Young and J.J. Spahn. Two rookies really played well. I mean, I had a really nice chat with David Young, Cameron's father, who's a PGA of America professional, and his teacher as well. We had that on Musings on Golf leading into Bethpage. But I was impressed. I mean, I've always sort of impressed by Cameron Young, just and for that matter, J.J., just on their focus. They're very serious players, and they seem to be very comfortable as rookies in the situations they were put into.
Absolutely. I think, you know, In J.J. Spahn's case, maybe the less you know, the better, because, you know, it's not like he plays Bethpage Black a lot, but he, you know what, he's 34, I believe, and he's very impressive as a veteran golfer. He's been through so much. I think he should have, you know, definitely been used more. And Cameron Young, as you say, shot a 64 course record in the final round when he won the New York State Amateur. Cameron was the star of that team. One thing about Captain Bradley that I didn't express was that I didn't feel that he was flexible enough. He even said he would not, in quotes, deviate from his game plan. And I think when you're in this situation, you must, as you say, you have to look at so many things, you know, not only the statistical data of which teams play well together, what guys play well together, but as you say, Cameron Young, you know, his experience on Bethpage Black put him in every session, you know, because, you know, he's played the course. Doesn't matter who he's playing with. He's played the course so often, he's bound to, you know, kind of have positive memories from his previous wins there. So, a lot of mistakes, I think, from Keegan's side, although give Keegan a lot of credit. I thought he was the most passionate, inspiring leader, but he did make some rookie captain mistakes. And unfortunately, I don't think he's going to get another chance, Kelly. I think it's almost heartbreaking for him because he missed his chance to play in this. Yeah. As I mentioned before, I really think he should have played and not captained. And then looking forward, as you mentioned, Ireland hosting in 2027, you know, do you really think Tiger Woods wants to take on the role of captain for a team that I think is going to go into the next Ryder Cup with the same issues that they had now? So everybody thinks, oh, Tiger is going to say yes, 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 yes. He's the natural choice. He knows JB McManus, the wealthiest guy in Ireland, the owner of Adair Manor. But do you really think that Tiger, when you think about it, is going to want that responsibility and want to go into a scenario where he might not have the greatest, you know, chance of beating the Europeans in Ireland after?
I can answer that with a resounding no. I do not think he will want that. In fact, Tiger's always seen the bigger picture. I think he would look at it more as putting himself in a chance to reclaim the Ryder Cup when it comes back to the States. Let's just say it'll have been three consecutive losses. Now it comes back to where they 29 at Hazeltine, at where the U.S. has already won before. And now on home soil, that to me would make the most sense. I just look back at it. And I think for Keegan, he was put in a very tough spot. He did the best he could. And why Tiger Woods really did not accept this to begin with, I'm still honestly at a bit of a loss in New York on home soil. But to your point, the passion and the sheer patriotism that Keegan Bradley has always expressed is so admirable, right? And at some point, Ann LaGore, it would be nice to see the guy actually get something really good out of the Ryder Cup, wouldn't it?
Well, who knows? In 2 years, he might still be playing. Look at all these. Look at Justin Rose. He's 45 and going strong, playing some of the best golf of his life, right? So, you know, maybe it will be a better ending for Keegan Bradley if he could play on the team in 2027 and contribute. I'm not going to say that the Americans can go in there and win that, but it would be an opportunity for Keegan to at least experience the joy of playing again and contributing to the American team.
Ann LaGore, this has been a real treat. As I said, you were nice enough to spend time with us before. Talk a little bit again about Life on the Green, the book that you've had out. I know you've had a lot of success with it. What is it, what it is, why you wrote it, et cetera.
Yeah, Life on the Green, Lessons and Wisdom from Legends of Golf. It features 12 legends in golf, 6 men, 6 women. And as I said, many of the guys are just Ryder Cup legends. And we talk about, you know, with Jack Nicklaus and Ben Crenshaw and Tom Watson and Bernard Langer, Padre Carrington, Gary Player. You know, we talk about some of the key moments in their iconic careers. But and with the women as well, you know, Dottie Pepper and Annika Sorenstam and Jan Stevenson, Nancy Lopez, Amy Alcott, Renee Powell. Basically, it's very uplifting. I wanted to write a very positive book, and that would really get to the heart of wisdom and life lessons that everybody can benefit from. So if you're a golfer, you're going to enjoy some of the real in-depth stories from each of these personalities about their careers and great stories that they were so willing to share. And if you're not a golfer, you'll enjoy the life lessons. You know, we learn so much from golf. Gary Player talks about pursuing your passion. How great, 90 years young, and Gary Player is still pursuing his passion, playing golf, working out, eating well. Jack Nicklaus talks about the importance of integrity and good sportsmanship and putting family first. And Nancy Lopez talks about the power of positive thinking and playing happy golf, which sounds so easy to do, but it's so, so hard, and how it translates to life. Just, you know, to really focus on the positivity in your life when you have a lot of things. All of us experience things that don't go right, but you have to focus on the good things. So, I mean, there's just so many great lessons in the book, and I'm very proud of it. And I'm so thankful that every legend in the book, Kelly, thanked me for including them, which shows you what incredible people they are. And Jim Nance wrote a great foreword. So very grateful.
You're right. And you should be really proud of it. I've read the book, and you're uplifting is a great way to put it. Right. And that's so much of what we love about our game. Yes, it can be really tough, but the life lessons that you point out, I always preach that. Right. And the camaraderie and getting to spend time with family and friends there's just so much that's great about golf.
There's so much, and every chapter has a different theme. They all came out with incredible life lessons. But, you know, for instance, Padre Carrington talks about embracing your fear and nerves and learn from your mistakes. I might have mentioned this the last time we spoke, but he admits that he is fearful every time he goes to the tee box, not just nervous, but he actually has fear because he doesn't know who's going to show up. And he takes that and explains to everybody that they should embrace whatever fear we have and use it as adrenaline. And he uses his fear to focus more and he kind of turns it around to be positive about it. And, you know, here and Tom Watson, learn from the best, stay humble and stay in the present. Tom talks about mentorship and how he learned from Arnold Palmer, Byron Nelson, and Jack Nicklaus. And he tells great stories about what he learned from these three mentors of his. And then he and Jack not only were intense rivals, but great friends to this day. I just saw Tom at a Ryder Cup party a couple of nights ago. And you saw what Tom said about.
I apologize on behalf of the, I know. Yeah. I wonder if, I wish the PGA of America had said some of the words that Tom Watson said, but maybe we'll hear that at some point. Okay, Anne Liguori, for our listeners, where can they purchase and buy up all the books possible of life on the green, lessons and wisdom from legends of golf? Where do they go?
It's on Amazon. All you have to do is type in life on the green and my name, Anne Liguori, and you can order it on Amazon. I'm sure you can find it in Barnes and Noble, but you know, the best place to go is Amazon. You'll have it tomorrow.
Yeah. And Maddie, you probably will. And as we finish up here, are there bright spots for the U.S.? Obviously, there's a plan in place. We've talked about on the European side. Is there reason for some optimism? Is there a plan? Is there a different plan that needs to be put in place going into 27 and maybe beyond for the U.S.?
It'll be interesting to hear, because I think at this point that, you know, the PGA has to, you know, take some time, reflect, and really put together a really good strategy and game plan and start working on it now, not next year. And I think they cannot wait for Tiger to give them an answer. You know, that was one of their issues for this Ryder Cup, is Tiger kind of, you know, strung them along. He said, I need more time. I can't give you an answer now. And a year out, they said, we need to know. So I think they need to get a leader in place right away. And then, you know, start with a new strategy And I'm look, there's a lot of smart people in those rooms. So they're going to go back and analyze what went wrong at this Ryder Cup and put a good strategy together. We have the greatest players in the world, right? But they have to be able to play with a partner and win and learn what those formats, play those formats more and practice. I mean, there's so much that needs to be done, but I think the PGA needs to do, really take a good look at it soon and get going right away.
Absolutely. And Ligora, this has been fabulous. Congratulations to the Europeans. They flat out deserve to win it. The U.S. made it. I mean, to say that it got exciting is an understatement on Sunday, but you can't, it's really hard to come back from 7 points down. The Europeans, they've got it figured out right now. Yes, there's a road ahead. There's some sort of path, but the European teams and those players, they're not going away. And the next generation of them, the Obergs, are coming on, right? So let's just continue to have great Ryder Cups with great sportsmanship. It can be a little chippy, Anne Liguori, but let's move forward in a good way when we think of the Ryder Cup.
It's one of the greatest sporting events on the planet. I've covered 6 Olympics, Winter Games, Summer Games. I've covered World Cup. I've covered the Super Bowl. I've covered World Series, NBA Finals. The Ryder Cup is the most exciting international sporting event there is. And the U.S. needs to figure out a way to make it as great as it can be, and to keep the spirit of golf and of the game what it should be: positive, uplifting, and just wonderful. It's just such a great competition.
Great way to end. Anne Liguori, thanks again so much for spending time with us here on Musings on Golf.
It's been my pleasure, Kelly. Thanks so much.
Hey, folks, stay tuned. Right after we hear from William and Harry, you're also going to hear from captains Keegan Bradley and Luke Donald at the end of the 45th Ryder Cup. America, this is your moment. William and Harry's limited edition spirit shoe is here to honor the Ryder Cup so every fan can feel like part of Team USA from the first tee to the final putt. Two head-turning designs, premium deerskin, 100% water-resistant with spikeless grip and all-day comfort. Just so you know, there's a limited run on these shoes, so don't sit this one out. Pre-buy now at williamandharry.com. Get into spirit, get into comfort. Thanks again for joining us for this really special episode of Musings on Golf. Now let's hear from U.S. Captain Keegan Bradley at the conclusion of play, in terms of how proud he was of his 12-man team.
I had to learn a lot on the fly. I had to rely on a lot of people. I was going up against, an incredible team. And, they played the last 2 days when we were way down. It looked, you wouldn't have known we were way down. They looked like they were battling. Their body language was good. They were pumping up the crowd. They were, they were fighting the whole way, even when things were not looking good. And I didn't expect anything different than these guys who are determined, proud, and playing for each other, playing for their team, playing for their country. And they showed the world today that, really anything's possible. And, yeah, I mean, the Europeans won one match today. It just shows you just how proud these guys are and how much they want this and how much this means to them. And to watch them go out all week and hold their heads high and then go out there today and do what they did is close to a miracle. We were this close to doing this, and it was just so fun for me to sit back and watch and say on the radio, say, we got to have this putt, and it went in. Or, all right, now we need JT to make it, and then he makes it. It was just to be able to do stuff like that under pressure is remarkable, and to watch it up close was special. Never been more proud of anything in my life.
Ann and I talked at length about the strategies, the really brilliant strategies that Luke Donald put in place for this Ryder Cup. Let's hear what Captain Donald had to say after it was all said and done, after his team had won another Ryder Cup, and the details that he put in place to ensure that that happened.
Yeah, I really have committed myself to this job because I feel I owe it to the players and I owe it to the Ryder Cup, which has been so special to me. I've had so many incredible experiences. So, yeah, I've had to kind of put my own game a little bit to the side, and every day I'm trying to think about things that could help us, come up with different things that might just give us a little edge. You know, we came into this in New York. We knew New York was not going to be easy. It was rough. It was brutal at times out there. It really was. It was nasty sometimes. But, you know, I think when you prep these guys enough and you communicate enough with these guys and you give them a plan and an idea and a theme and a motivation, they don't really need motivating, but, you know, the theme kind of causes the cohesion of the team. And, you know, I was very fortunate to have 11 of the same guys from Rome. My job is, yeah, literally to give these guys a better chance to win. Can be as simple as some very small things. I'll give you an example. At the hotel rooms this week, the doors to our hotel rooms had a big crack and it let in light. We brought things that covered the light. We put different shampoos that had a better smell. We changed the bedding because the beds weren't very good and they just had sheets, and we created a much nicer bed so guys could sleep, they could have more energy. So those are just little things, but I mean, I'm going into some really small details. But it's just taking the time and having the care that you want to do everything you can to kind of give these guys the best opportunity. You want to create an environment where they can succeed. These are 12 amazing players. We know that. So you're just trying to put them in a position where they feel comfortable.
Well, we thank Anna LaGuardia again for her time, her fantastic insights. It was a most remarkable and memorable week. And congratulations to the Europeans. We take another direction next week. We've actually got a little bit of hockey blending in with golf on our mind as the NHL season commences. We're going to be joined by TJ Oshie, former player for the Washington Capitals. He really made a name for himself at the Olympics in Sochi in 2014. TJ is a very, very passionate golfer, has a lot to say about his love of the game, and also gives some predictions for the upcoming NHL season.